afternoon, and welcome back to Banter by the Bay. I am on radio.dominican.edu. It is a beautiful day, and it is World Series baseball time. If you've been sleeping under a rock, then you don't know. The Giants won last night, Game 1 of the World Series, 7-1. And today at 5:07 is Game 2. I'm going to go in-depth about Game 1 and how the Giants were able to show their dominance, and then preview Game 2 tonight. And in the last second, I will touch on the upcoming Golden State Warriors season. All right, let's get into this Game 1 discussion. Wow. Wow. Whenever you can take Game 1, it's a great, great day. You feel happy. You feel confident. You know, I'm cynical of all cynical coming to the Giants. You know, they're torture. Every time I feel like something bad's going to happen, they somehow pull it off. But last night I was feeling good. Got bum on the mound. Big James game. Big game James for the Kansas City Royals. And, you know, they call him that, but this is his first World Series. They should call him Big Game Bum or something, because he just is a dominant beast, a beast in the World Series. He's an animal. I mean, they showed his World Series record. He's like 3-0, less than one ERA. It's just unbelievable. I mean, he have only in 21 innings pitched, 21 innings scoreless pitch was broken in the seventh inning in the World Series after a home run was hit. So, you know, Bum is just an animal. The Giants' offense was great. But, you know, today, an hour away, game time, my nerves are starting to come back. Stress levels starting to get up there. It is a very, very difficult thing to do to win two games away in the World Series. But when that happens, the team that wins away usually wins the World Series. But we're not talking about that. No, we're not going to jinx ourselves. Let's talk about Game 1. So, like I said, Bumgarner for against Big Game James. That's James Shields. If you don't know his nickname, he was given that nickname by the Tampa Bay Rays. He was pitched an extremely big game for them, getting into the wild card game into the playoffs 2 years ago. But he's never proven himself truly in the playoffs. And, you know, he has a high ERA this postseason. He didn't do anything against the A's. He didn't do so well against the Orioles, and he got lit up last night. Let me say that. I mean, if he can't throw that changeup, I mean, that's his pitch. He has that fastball. Got 90, 92, 93. You know, he's not a hard thrower, not going to blow it by you. Got some cut on his fastball. So it's kind of hard to see out of the hand, hard to hit. But then he comes with that changeup. Out of the hand, it looks just like a fastball, and it just comes, and everyone is so out on their front foot. But last night, you know, there's one thing you cannot do with a changeup. If you want to throw a changeup, throw it in the dirt. Fine. Don't miss over the plate, and don't miss above the knees. Because if you miss above the knees with a changeup and that hitter is guessing it, oh, see ya later. See ya. And they were doing that all game. Pablo hit a nice, you know, but Pablo can hit any ball anywhere. So that ball was 4 inches off the dirt, and he ropes it down the line for a double. And it was just an absolute shot. Great, great hit. You know, Pablo can hit the ball from the ground to the floor, you know, everything in between. And then Pence hit a fastball up in the zone. So, again, with those back-to-back hitters, you never know what going to happen. So let's talk about Bumgarner. He went seven innings, allowed only three hits, one run, which was a home run in the bottom of the seventh. He had one walk and five strikeouts. Not high strikeout totals, but you know what? At this point, it doesn't matter. A win is a win. He had dominated this game. He only had one time where he was in any trouble, and that was in the third inning. And this was truly the mega break point of the game for the Royals. You know, it was 3-0 at that time. We are, you know, have the momentum. The crowd is getting into it. It was second and third, no outs. They got their Kane, one of their best contact hitters. I wouldn't say his best hitters. They got Infante up, you know, another great contact hitter. So you assume that they could score a run, but boom. Bumgarner goes, strikes both of them out, walks the next guy, you know, a right-handed hitter. he's lefty, you know, maybe righty, see him a little better. So then Hosmer comes up, probably the hottest hitter in the World Series right now. Bumgarner throws this pitch that I haven't seen ever. People were talking about after the game, they've never seen him. He's playing around in the World Series with pitches. You know, he threw a 66-mile-an-hour curveball, which he's never thrown before. And then he threw, came back, and he's usually his slider's up in the 90, 91, 88, up around there. He threw an 85-mile-an-hour slider that just had Hosmer completely puzzled and just hits it off the end of bat. Easy squid play to Crawford. And so, I mean, you just saw his face. They showed a replay of Hosmer's face after he hit that ball. It was just like astonishment. And after the game, he even talked about, what is this guy, an animal? He sees other pitchers pitching, and he's like, oh, I really like that pitch, and he puts it into his arsenal, and he's able to use it in the World Series. That 66-mile-an-hour curveball, that's a Wainwright. That's a Cardinals pitcher. That's what he throws. That's what his specialty is. And he threw in it, and everyone was just looking like, whoa, that was nasty. That's what he did it. He threw it. It's just amazing. Bumgarner was changing his pitches up incredibly last night. Had all the batters fooled. He let up. He broke his scoreless streak, which I was rooting for. I love all these streaks. I love all this stuff. You know, Petit had those streaks in the beginning of the season, or in the middle of the season, of a scoreless ending or hitless innings, which was a great, cool thing to have. You know, it shows how dominant he is and how unappreciated he is. So he broke his 21 inning streak in the World Series, and then he broke a 30 inning plus postseason away streak, and both of those were coming back from 2010 to 2014. So, you know, he's dominant. You know, he's a freak. He's our ace. He's our horse. He's everything that you want in a pitcher. You know, I was listening to the radio. They got that debate going on. Kershaw versus Bumgarner. Kershaw versus Bumgarner. Oh, wow. Kershaw's the greatest regular season pitcher. Whatever. Cool. How many rings do you have? Zero. I'm just talking a lot of crap because he's a Dodger, and I hate the Dodgers. Dodger blue is the ugliest color. You know, Bumgarner's in his third World Series at 25. Kershaw's up there, 27, 28. Bumgarner's only making a half, maybe a quarter of what Kershaw's making. Look at Kershaw, got lit up in the playoffs. He did nothing. He was all over the place. He left his curve up. You know, no one's ever hit a home. No left-handed hitter's ever hit a curveball for a home run against him in his career. And Matt Adams just boom, see ya. Cracked one in the seventh inning to beat them. I mean, you know, money doesn't buy you championships. Money buys you getting to the playoffs. Look at the Angels. Look at the Dodgers. They're gonna keep getting back to the playoffs. But you know what gets you to the ship? Good defense, great pitching on starters, and most importantly, the bullpen. The Dodgers had no bullpen, and the Giants and the Royals have outstanding bullpens. Royals have a great, great bullpen. They're 7, 8, 9 pitchers. They're just shut down. I mean, they've only blown combined together 4 games all season. So if they have a lead going into the 7th, it's going to be tough sledding from there. So it's important that we keep the lead, like what we did in game 1 is great. Get that lead early, keep it, because then they can't put their best relievers in. That's how you beat them. Stay away from the best relievers. Make them be more offensive than they want to be. They want to put up a couple runs and then let their relievers end it. And last night, we put up a bunch of runs and not let them play their small ball. They had to get hits, doubles. They had to get RBIs. They don't play like that. They like to get one guy. They like to be in a 1-2 run game where they can get a guy on first, steal second, bunt him over to third, sack fly home. So that's their game. I mean, that's our game too, but our offense is more depth in hitting. They're not a very strong offensive team. They're the only team ever to have one of the worst, top 5 worst hitting team. And I think the other was top five walking team to ever make the World Series. That's a crazy stat. These guys, you know, are not good offensive players. But, you know, the times click, things happen. you know, postseason baseball is a whole new story, and they're able to do what they're doing. So don't take anything away from them. Of course, they have a great offensive team. They wouldn't be here if they're not. Giants early offense in the first. Hunter Pence hit that two-run bomb. Wow, was that just an amazing shot. But let's talk about earlier. Blanco started off with a base hit. Start the game off, saw a bunch of pitches, fought off great pitches. You know, if that's what Blanco needs to do, be the Angel Gone. Just, you know, I don't care if you strike out after seeing six, seven, eight pitches. I don't care if you ground out after seeing five or six pitches. But you cannot be up there, first batter of the game, and swing at the first pitch and ground out to the pitcher. It's just, you cannot do that. What you need to do is let everyone in that dugout see as many pitches as they can. The more pitches that everyone else gets to see, so, you know, he has to show his fastball. Like, for last night's case, for instance, James Shields had to show his fastball, how to show his slider, and show how to show his changeup. And if the Giants are able to see it as a team, they're able to see it, then we can able to recognize it and able to know when he's throwing it, able to figure out tendencies. So that's great. And then he got a base hit. Panic hit a deep fly ball, moved him over to second, which was a great play by Blanco, heads up base running. Buster Posey hits a single. Blanco is not able to score, holds at third. A wild pitch. Buster's able to move over to second. Oh, no, no, sorry. What? He didn't move over to second. Pablo hits a double. Blanco scores easily, and then Buster Posey is thrown out at home for the third time this year. For the third time. I understand what Flannery is trying to do. He's trying to put pressure on the defense of the Royals. You know, they have to make two perfect throws, one from the outfielder to the infielder, infielder to the catcher. And, you know, putting that pressure on them, you know, they make one bad throw, one low throw, then that he's safe. But, you know, Buster's been thrown out three times. There was only one out with Hunter Pence coming up next, second and third. Maybe you hold him. Maybe you think that let's put the pressure on the pitcher. You know, maybe he walks Hunter Pence and then we go to Belt. So, you know, there's a whole different situation. I think Flannery did made the right decision by sending him. And it was, you know, that's who the Giants are. We put pressure on the defense. Royals are great defensively. So is the Cardinals. You keep putting pressure and more pressure and more pressure, they're going to crumble sometimes. And the Giants this whole postseason have had a 2-to-1 ratio of men in scoring position compared to their opponents. We have not come through on many of those scoring opportunities, but we have put pressure on throughout the whole entire playoffs. And that's what the Giants do. They make the other teams make their mistakes because they're in their head. They're always coming after them. They're always trying. They're always doing what they do, get on base and try to move people over. Hunter Pence, you know, that was a bomb, just an absolute bomb. Finally, that's his first home run in over a month. And I was talking with my friend, and we were trying to think. He didn't hit any home runs earlier this postseason, and he didn't hit any last postseason. So, is this his first home run as a Giant in the postseason? Wow. That's crazy, because that's over 150 bats. That's a lot of bats in the postseason. And he has power. We've all seen it through the years. He has power. He is able to hit that long ball. And I mean, when he hits it, he crushes it. He just doesn't barely make it over the fence. He crushed it. That was over the right center field wall. That was a 421 plus home run. So I talked about James Shields' changeup not working so well. There's a couple reasons why I think that this might have happened, might have been an instant where a player has too many days off. As I talked before, you know, when we played Pittsburgh had 2 days off. We were all fired up. We played them. We beat them. And then the Nationals had 5 days off, and they were not coming in hot. So, you know, James Shields had 10 days off. You know, maybe he was overthrowing. Because when you overthrow that changeup, it rises in the zone and is able to be hit. So I think he was feeling so good because he was so rested, and he hadn't had this kind of rest all season, especially in the playoffs. He didn't have any of this kind of rest. He was so amped, and I think that adrenaline got to him. You know, his first ever World Series start. This is all the Royals' first ever World Series start. So I think that was our advantage because we've been here so many times. We know how to deal with the pressure. Bumgarner knows how to deal with the pressure. If anyone, you know, Bumgarner, and you, if you listen to his interview after the game, it was just Bumgarner, I'm going to work. You know, I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm going to do the same thing I've been doing all year, pitch my game, you know. And, I mean, you have to pitch this game like it's any other game, even though the crowd is 10 times as loud. The trophy's huge, you know. You got everyone staring at you. So, you know, it's a very, very high-pressured situation. So let's talk about we're playing in Kansas City and we get a DH. That means that a designated hitter. So the pitcher doesn't have to hit. I mean, and we could have hit Bumgarner last night, which wouldn't be a bad idea. But Michael Morse is a better hitter. But I know Bum doesn't like to pitch without hitting. So Michael Morse at DH is what makes the National League so much more difficult for offenses is that you have to deal with that ninth spot. You have to deal with the pitcher hitting, you know, and that's like a free out for the other team. But when you bring in a DH, we have a DH now. We have Michael Morse. We could put him in. He's a big, strong, hits the ball hard. He's hitting seventh. Just absolutely lengthens our lineup. Lengthens means everyone from 1 to 9 can hit. If you have Ishikawa, our, you know, hero of the last series, I mean, how many RBIs? He had 8 RBIs last series. He's hitting 8th. And then you have Crawford, who's been on fire, hitting 9th. And then you go back to the top of the lineup. That's why I think the National League has always had the advantage in the World Series, because the National League goes to American League. It's not that much of a difference. You just put in a hitter. But when the American League team goes to a National League team park, then they have to take their DH out, who is probably one of their best hitters. Do you play him in the field? He's a liability in the field, but do you play him as Billy Butler? Do you play him at first? Where do you put Eric Hosmer? So there's just so many different aspects. And, you know, the pitcher has to hit. They don't know how to pitch. So, you know, it's very stressful for American League team, I think, more in the World Series than it is for a National League team such as the Giants. And I think that's why the Giants are able always to adapt well and play well in the playoffs, because playing with the DH is not that hard offensively, but pitching wise, then you know that every batter is able to hit a home run. Every batter is able to put the bat on the ball. Let's talk, you know, the top of the lineup. You know, I've already talked about a little bit about Blanco. If he's able to see those pitches, able to get a couple hits, you know, infield hits, slaps down the line, base hits, bunt singles, I don't care. Anything he can do to get on base is just going to improve our chances of winning these games. Because when you get that number one hitter on, then you got Panic, who can just put the ball anywhere in the field. If he's got such unbelievable bat control, which means he can, you know, poke it in directions anywhere he wants to go. He can take a pitch that is inside and he can make it go to the opposite field. So if he's hitting right-handed, he can make it go to the left, right field. So it's amazing. And then you got the big boys up, Buster, who's not been crushing the ball during the postseason. I think he's more of a base hit doubles guy right now. We don't have any home run killers right now who have 2, 3, 4, 5 home runs in the postseason. No, we only got, everyone's got one. You know, a Belt has one, Crawford has one, Pence has one. Yeah, that's about it. So, you know, it's great for right now. Ishikawa has one. Oh man, how did I forget about that one? The most important one, that walk off. So if the top of the lineup starts producing, if Panic starts getting on base, everything like that, then we'll be able to start producing down the lineup, because we have that I was talking about before, that length in the lineup that we can produce. Any of them can produce RBIs. Everyone has good numbers. So I think this American League is very – American League parks are very – usually American League parks are smaller and home run parks, which would be difficult for the Giants because we're not a home run hitting team. And most American League teams are, but this Kansas City Kauffman Stadium, is massive. It's massive. It's huge. So it's like AT&T Park. It's the same kind of dimensions where these outfields are just ongoing and huge, and the outfielders can roam. It was just a great, great situation. I'm going to take a quick break right now, and I will be right back in a second.
This is another Bosco break. If you're going to have someone ship you a package of cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine via FedEx, make sure the sender has a correct address. Three Houston residents are likely cursing the person who mislabeled just such a package after it arrived at the wrong residence and the owner alerted the police, the Houston Chronicle reports. A tip directed cops to a nearby house where they say they found Michael Taylor, Stephanie Adams, and Leslie Peck holed up with $100,000 worth of drugs and a weapons arsenal, as well as Adam's 5-year-old kid, who was reportedly napping while mom did meth in the next room. In addition to the drugs in the package, they also say they found LSD, hashish, pain pills, steroids, morphine, codeine, and even prescription cancer medications. Oh, and also a bunch of shotguns, handguns, and a semi-automatic rifle. The three were arrested on drug and weapons charges and currently have a new address, the Harris County Jail. As for other drug news, San Miguel de Allende is a sleepy artist enclave nestled in the mountains of central Mexico, equally popular with the artists and retired Americans. But the city jolted awake yesterday as federal special forces swept into a seafood restaurant and nabbed one of the nation's most notorious drug lords, Hector Beltran Leyva, who had apparently been hiding in plain sight in nearby Querétaro. The honcho of the eponymous Beltran Leyva cartel had been posing as a dealer of not drugs, but rather art and real estate, says a rep with the Mexican AG's office, and was living a low-key lifestyle, avoiding attracting the attention of neighbors, friends, or the authorities. Beltran Leyva is the fourth of his brothers to fall, notes the AP. Two others are currently cooling their heels behind bars, while another was killed in 2009, when Beltran Leyva took over leadership of the cartel. Obviously, this is not the Beltran Leyva's organization in its strongest moment, says a Mexican security expert, but it continues to be a criminal organization capable of generating localized violence in some states. Beltran Leyva's head carries a $5 million bounty stateside and a $2.2 million bounty in Mexico. As opposed to the capture of Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, dubbed the world's most powerful drug lord, Leyva's capture is the latest in a string of coups for Mexican authorities. That's all for your Bosco break. Back to the show.
Thank you, Bosco, for that great break and very interesting story about drugs and a lot of illegal things. All right, let's get back. I want to review game two. It's coming up in about 40 minutes. Yes, I am so excited. It's Jake Peavy versus Yordando Ventura. Let me go into a little depth about Ventura if you don't know much about him. He's a young rookie. He's a flamethrower. He throws close to 100 on his fastball, and then he can change it up on you with a 75-mile-an-hour curve that just has all different types of movements. He went to Pedro Martinez last night, and a report came out this morning, and he was asking him on, how do I pitch in the World Series, How is the intensity? Pedro's been there a couple times. No, I think only once in 04, but he wasn't at his prime. But Pedro still has that, knows what the atmosphere is like, still knows what pitching in big moments in Yankee Stadium and things like that. So, Yordando wanted some help. He needed some help, which I would do if I was a player and had resources. They're countrymen, so they know each other from younger. Yordando probably looked up to Pedro as a young kid. Yordando's only in his early 20s, and as a older countryman of a pitcher who's now in the spotlight. You want to be that mentor. So that's what Pedro's trying to do. You know, Pedro's now on the MLB Network. He's not a very good analyst. Can't understand him much at all. But, you know, he's able to maybe help this young kid out. And, you know, he wasn't the only one that got help. Jake Peavy also got some help from his good friends from the Red Sox, who play a lot of these Kansas City Royals, play them, 20-plus times a year. So Dustin Pedroia was one of them. It was supposedly around 5 players on the Red Sox that called Peavy and let him know some of the strengths of these players, some of the weaknesses, you know, how you should align your defense. This is all just such valuable, valuable information. You know, our scouts can do so much, but these guys play them so many times a year. These guys are able to tell you the secrets. You know, you can see so much on videotape and from the stands, but playing in a game against somebody, you have a very different perspective, and that perspective was, you know, shared with Peavy, and he was able to, you know, he's able to maybe take that and pitch people different ways, pitch to defenses, pitch to their weaknesses. So there's a lot of great, you know, information that could be brought out from all those Red Sox players. You know, Peavy pitched last year in the World Series. Thank God the Red Sox had great offense, because he did not pitch very well at all. He doesn't have great postseason numbers. This year he has a great ERA of under 2. But, you know, the World Series is a different thing. You know, it's all the emotions are flying. Jake Peavy is a very emotional person. He's very fired up. He's a very dedicated, you know, especially to Bruce Bochy. He even said last night, he was interviewing after the game, and he was just saying, you know, when Boch looks at you, he knows, he gives you that look like, you got to do this. I am confident in you. So, you know, that confidence, he said that no other a manager is able to just give that confidence with just a look. He does it to all of his players. So Peavy is real rived up, real ready to go. He is, you know, Mr. Fireball. He's going to be a little amped. I hope that he's not too amped. You know, we've talked about this before. You're too amped. You're too out of the zone. You leave the ball up. The ball goes out of the park. Hunter Strickland can tell you all about that. You know, hopefully playing for Bochy and the Giants, he finds a way, you know, to just relax. Let our great defense do the work. Don't have to strike out everyone. You know, PV's not a strikeout pitcher anymore. He's just not he's more of a control guy. He's not power anymore like he used to be with the Padres. He's definitely a corner pitcher. You know, it's going to be with those kind of pitchers, him and Hudson, it's important on what kind of umpire you have behind the plate, because, you know, some umpires don't give you the corners, and if he doesn't get the corners, that means he has to come over the plate. And the ball is going to get hard. Compared to a umpire that's able to give you corners, then he can nibble it out wider and wider, and, you know, try to stretch the zone, keep nibbling, and, you know, then the offensive players, the batters, have to be thinking of, oh, okay, if the umpire is going to call the ball out strikes on the corners, then I have to start swinging out there, because I don't want to keep looking at all these strikes. I don't want to strike out. So, you know, it's a mind game. You know, there's so many different aspects of baseball. There's so many different intricacies. It's great. It's just such a great sport, but yet it's so stressful. Again, I can't harp on how cynical I am. You know, my friends will watch with me, and they'll be like, why are you not jumping around? You know, I'm just always thinking about the negative things that could happen. But, you know, it's just something about me just makes me just so stressed. I have so much anxiety about it. I have so much, you know, nerves. And even though we won game one last night, that made me even more nervous, because, you know, now it's everyone thinking we can win the series. Everyone's now saying whoever wins game one usually wins the series. You know, that puts me into a position where, like, oh my God, if we lose it would be the worst thing in the world, because all these people keep on shoving it in my face, telling me, you know, wow, people look at all these stats with game one winners, you know, their offense was good, we blew them out. Oh God, just be quiet, please. You know, I'm so nervous for game 2, because anything can happen. You know, anything can happen. They can squeak out a 1-2 victory, 2-1 victory, and, you know, really put us in a very, you know, split 1-1, come home, we're all thinking, oh, nice, we got home field advantage back, and boom, they take 2 out of 3 in San Francisco, and we're back to square one. So you never know, and it's just, you know, every game should be played like it's game 7. I know you don't use your relievers that the same way, but every player on the field should be going all out, you know, especially on the Giants, you know, put our foot's on their throat, now step on it, let's finish this, let's win this, let's win this 2 games in KC, because if you win 2 games away, that's magical. You know, we did that, against the Rangers, it was against Detroit, you know, oh no, it was against the Rangers, we swept them, beat them twice in their home, and we were able to just step on their throat and finish them. So great way to win the World Series. It's just hard, you know, sweep, because, you know, everyone else in the country wants to see set game 7, high intensity, high, that would, you know, I would have a heart attack. People would have to be watching me at all times, because that would just be way too stressful. Last year, or 2012, was extremely stressful. Oh my God, I think I lost so much hair. You know, in 2012, we were going to come back kings, cardiac kings too. You know, we're down 0-2 into Cincinnati, and somehow we win that game. Or against the Braves, we were down 1-2. And you know, Brooks Conrad, if you guys remember who Brooks Conrad is, he made 3 errors in 1 game, and the Giants won. And just, you know, there's just so much stress is built up in my life revolving around sports. I love sports. It's my reality TV show. It's what I follow. I don't follow whatever those Kim Kardashians or Real Housewives of whatever. I mean, my reality TV show's NBA, NFL, and MLB. So is who's being traded who? Who's better than who? What's going to happen when these two face off? These people don't like each other. They're going to throw fights. So it's just like, it is reality TV without a doubt. There's so much drama and so much money. Think about how much money these guys are making. Okay. And also about the Royals, they've all faced PV. You know, PV was pitching with the Red Sox earlier this year. And so they're in the same division. Of course, they saw PV. So they all have had a batch against PV, which is good for, you know, them. They know PV. They've seen him before. You know, they're not going to be coming out looking at, never seeing this, only watching it in film and never being in the batter's box. Like the Giants, 0 Giants have seen Ventura. So it's kind of the opposite. You know, they kind of have the advantage here where we both are in a very different place where they have so much experience where we have no experience against the pitcher. But like I said before, the Giants are the best hitting fastball team in the league, and this guy throws fastballs over the middle. He doesn't try to hit the corners. You know, when you have a 100-mile-an-hour pitch, you don't have to hit the corners. You have to stay low, and you have to stay over the plate. But still, we have Pablo, we have Hunter, we have Buster. Those people are not afraid of a 100-mile-an-hour pitch. Those people thrive with the 100-mile-an-hour pitch. They love it. You know, Giants, I told you, are number one in hitting fastballs 95 and above. That is an incredible stat. I don't know. There's just every single stat for the Giant or for baseball. You know, you can take how many this pitcher's won is undefeated in road games on turf at night in domes. There's a statistic like that. It's just absolutely crazy. That is baseball, a statistical sport. And he only throws fastball, but he does have that nasty curveball. If you see a 2-strike at bat, he throws that curve, and that thing drops 20 miles an hour and then has a filthy movement going away from right-handed batters and towards the back foot of left-handed batters. So it's just something you always got to be aware of. Those are his 2 pitches. His 3rd pitch is a slider that is really more of a changeup in the low 90s. So his fastball's got some tail, but it's a very straight fastball. And, I mean, when he's on, he is nasty. But nerves and the World Series, and there's nothing like it. This is the pinnacle. This is where everyone wants to be. This is where people dream about. This is where people, you know, play their whole lives to get to this moment. And the nerves really do get to you, and especially to a young rookie. You know, this is his first playoff experience. Now he's in the World Series, you know. All these players for the Royals, they have no playoff experience. They're all just such young athletes. They're all growing. Alex Gordon is their old, I mean, him and Billy Butler are their old KC reliable players who've been there for 4 or 5 years. Billy Butler maybe 6, 7. But they got no extreme, you know, experience on their team. They don't have any, like, people they've picked up who've, maybe Josh Willingham, their pinch hitter, that they've have experience in the postseason. I mean, they've been just doing this all, just playing along. They've been rolling. You know, Ned Yost said, they were questioning to Ned Yost, who's the manager of the Royals, when did you guys feel like you got postseason experience? He said, 8th inning of the wild card game when they were down, 5 runs to the A's, and they came back to beat them in some crazy fashion. At that point, he said, these players know we could do it. These players now have the experience. But postseason experience is important. But there's a difference between postseason and getting to that World Series, that final series. There's just, you have gone through so much already. You've seen so much been played. You've seen all these different, you know, pitchers and great hitters not make it. You know, great pitchers falling down and showing that they are able to hit Kershaw. But you know, and these Royals have just done absolutely well. I mean, they won 8 in a row until last night, so they didn't even lose in the postseason. So let's see how they react. That's another good point. Let's see how they react to winning, you know. Let's see how they are, you know, going to take a loss and see how they can move forward. Because the loss, you know, they haven't experienced that loss. That loss can be detrimental, you know. It could hurt their wave, their groove, you know. Ventura has never pitched in the postseason after a loss. So, you know, maybe he thinks he has to overcompensate. Maybe he thinks he has to pitch the perfect game. I mean, as a Giants fan, that's what you want. You want him to pitch that perfect game. Because, you know, once you try to do that perfect game, you make mistakes because you overthrow. You try to throw too many great pitches. When you try to throw those great pitches all the time and not save them, you overthrow your arm. And Ventura's had right shoulder problems. You know, his velocity last time he pitched was only in the 96, 97 compared to his 100, 101 that he was throwing in the relief appearance in Oakland. But yeah, you don't want to be, you know, overcompensating. You don't want to. For them, they should think the series is still 0-0. They should really, you know, not think about that loss. That loss has to be behind them, but it is a must win. If I was their coach, I'd be, you have to win this game. You know, we need to stay in this series, and, you know, we need to get this series back to 1-1. But that loss, they can't think about it at all. You know, they can only think about it as moving forward, because if they daunt on that loss, I mean, they got only 4 hits, 1 walk, 1 run, and the Giants made an error. They had no offensive. They didn't get into any of their game. Their game is stealing bases. Bumgarner, you know, when you only have 5, 6 people get on base, and then those people hit into double plays, you know, you can't be in their offense, which is the stealing, quick, you know, moving people over, sack flies, manufacturing runs, not producing a ton of runs. So it's an interesting combination of how the Giants pitching is able to keep them off the bases, and then when they are on base, how we hold them on. You know, Bumgarner's got a great move, very quick to the plate. I wasn't worried about him. I'm worried about Peavy and Hudson, because both of them are slower to the plate, right-handed pitchers, which means, you know, if you're a right-handed pitcher, you're not looking at first base, so the runners are able to get a bigger lead. The throw over to first is a lot slower, so, you know, the runner has an advantage, and they're definitely going to take advantage of this tonight. I'm assuming that they're going to try to steal as many bags as they can, because that is their game. I mean, Ned Yost was saying the other night before the World Series was on, he had an interview. He's like, And he said, you know, about this stealing, I haven't called a steal sign all postseason. They all have the green light and they go whenever. So, you know, if it's up to them and it's the World Series, they're going to try to do something fabulous. They're going to try to do something out of this world. They're going to try to do something better than everyone else. So they're going to try to steal bags. And you know what? They might get it done because PV is very slow going home, which means that from the time he's ready to throw to the time he gets home, his motion is slow, and that means there's more time for the runner to get to second base or a bigger jump, which can help him to get to second base. But Buster Posey's got a cannon. You know, Buster Posey, one of the great catchers in our league, one of our great catchers of the decade. You know, it's going to be a very, very interesting battle tonight against our pitcher versus their base-stealing prospects. Let's talk about their bullpen. I think we were able to use a couple of their bullpen relievers last night. They used Duffy for, I think, over 65 pitches, which means he's not going to be able to pitch tonight. You know, but that's their B team. They put their B relievers out there. They didn't waste any of the good relievers like Finnegan, who is a great long reliever, who actually pitched in the College World Series earlier this year and now is pitching in the actual World Series. So I think that's one of the first times ever done. It is an incredible story, an incredible feat for this absolute phenomenal 22-year-old kid who is just, you know, living a dream right now. You know, you get to the College World Series, but you don't even get to the finals, but then you're in the actual World Series with an MLB team, and you're now one of their top six relievers. That's just an unbelievable kind of transition in life, you know. It usually takes players a couple years to break into the MLB from the minors, and he just, what, a month and a half, 2 months? The College World Series wasn't that long ago. It was a little over 3 months ago. So, you know, he must have really showed some kind of pitching efforts down in AAA and AA. I think he didn't even get to AAA. I think during September, the MLB has all these call-ups. You can expand your roster from 25 to 50. And so they brought up all these players. Oh, sorry, 25 to, yeah, 50. You know, they bring up all these players, and, you know, sometimes they shine. I mean, for the Giants, it was Hunter Strickland. You know, he was shining during the regular season when we had all those call-ups. Sorry. It shows, you know, there's just so much diversity in baseball because these young players are coming up, and then these old players are performing. Like, PV is pitching great. So there's just so much great differences in baseball, great play from both the young and the older. It's great. And you look at 2012, we're playing the Cardinals in the NLCS. And they had this young fire thrower coming out of the bullpen, starting a game, Waka. He was so good. This year, St. Louis only used him for one game, and that was just to relieve a pitcher after he got hit real hard and needed a long reliever. So, you know, it's very interesting, the waves and the patterns, and, you know, players go up and down. So baseball is really a next man up. You know, step into that position and you need to fulfill or do better than that person, or we're going to put the next man up because there's somebody going to produce. Because there's so many players, so many people wanting their shot, that there's so many people willing to do what they need to do. So, you know, it's a great, it's like Joe Panic, you know, he's our seventh second baseman of the season, and finally we got one to stick, and it's this young rookie who's able to hit the ball, do exactly what a second baseman should do, play great defense, has a strong arm, and is definitely a great second hitter in the lineup, you know, and that two-hole is so important. I've talking about it for a while now, you know. You get players over, you get people in scoring position for your big hitters, and, you know, those are the P's, Buster Posey, Hunter Pence, and Pablo Sandoval, so... So it's great what's going on with, you know, the development of the youth in baseball. So what happens if we do get to them early in their bullpen? Then they just have to start using some of their good pitchers, some of their good relievers. If we jump on them early, 3-4, in the first couple innings, they're going to have to bring in Finnegan. They're going to have to bring in their studs. And that's what we want. We want to get to their bullpen early so that they're depleted for later on in other games. You know, that's the whole point. We want to really get to them and fatigue them. You know, they're not going to be that fatigued. You know, they swept through the playoffs But that's not never a good sign. As I said before, the 2007 Rockies, who swept through everyone, made the NL look like a piece of cake, and then come against the Red Sox, and the Red Sox just smacked them, drop four games on them real quick, and it was over. The World Series was over. Their magical run was over. So, but what the Rockies did is they really let that game one loss get to them. You know, they were definitely not as hyped the next game. They definitely were not pumped and ready to go. It was just a very, you know, they were lackadaisical. You know, they didn't seem as fired up. And every game, you got to be so fired up for the World Series because this is the biggest moment of your life. This is the biggest stage of your life. So, man, I'm sorry. I sometimes I get real excited. It's baseball. This is Giants. This is October baseball. It's a very rare thing. You know, three times in 5 years. But think about the years before that. We did not see many of this. So treasure every moment. I know people keep saying, oh, every even years, but please treasure these moments because, you know, it might not come for another 50 years. Look at the Royals. It might not come for another 25 years. Dang. And that would just break my heart. So really, you got to enjoy these moments because World Series, your team getting to World Series or some championship does not happen often unless you got some superstar who takes you there every year, LeBron James. But the Giants in the San Francisco Bay Area will never have an athlete like LeBron James or Kobe Bryant because we're not, just not big enough a market, which I think people think that about us, but our market has become such a massive place that it's changed. But still, I don't think this is a place where a superstar was wanting to go. To final thoughts about this game, I don't think it's going to be a 7-1 victory again for the Giants. I think it's going to be a 2-3 victory for the Giants or a 4-2 loss for the Giants. You know, they're going to grind, they're going to grind, they're going to grind, and they're going to grind. They're going to do what they're going to do. They're going to steal bases, try to get on, move people over. I sound like a record player, just keep repeating myself, but that's what they do. They repeat themselves. They get hits, and they get bunts, and they move people over. So I really, really hope the Giants are able to stop the running game and make them, you know, be stationary and not get on first at all. You know, I would love a no-hitter. That would be ideal for me. Make it less stressful on me. Save me some heartache. We are going to a break, and when I come back, I am going to review a little bit about the Warriors season and how the preseason has gone. You know, they're looking good. They're looking great, and I love when our teams in the Bay Area look good. So I will be back in a few.
With your 3 minute break. 3 minutes of the wildest, weirdest, wackiest news to get your mind off your day. Let's get it started. A 42-year-old woman, Stacy Spence, was hauled to jail for assault in Sandpoint, Idaho this summer. But when the squad car arrived at the station, officers learned that during the ride, she had completely gnawed through the back seat, the foam, the padding, and the seat cover. And you thought your dog's jaw was strong. A Louisiana teen is behind bars after police say he donned a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle mask and used a stick wrapped in plastic to rob a convenience store Thursday morning. Lafayette police say 18-year-old LaCorion Detron Turner is charged with first-degree robbery. Police say he was able to force his way behind the counter with the stick and then tried and failed to open the register. Police say Turner fled on foot after taking two wallets from underneath the counter. Officers arrested Turner a short time later, but it is still unclear if he has an attorney. An Irish pub on the Las Vegas Strip has broken a Guinness World Record after hosting more than 2 weeks of nearly non-stop live music. The concert began October 1st in the Re-Raw Pub in the Shops at Mandalay Bay, and it surpassed the previous record at 1 p.m. on Thursday, October 16th. The artists were playing non-stop music with no more than a 25-second break in between songs and a 5-minute break in between sets. This broke the previous world record for longest concerts by multiple artists by one day. A Connecticut man is facing charges after police say he grabbed a mop out of a hotel employee's hands and was mopping aggressively over the worker's shoes. Grr. Police say 30-year-old John Thornton was arrested Monday night and charged with breach of peace and threatening. Officers responding to the Bristol Hotel were told a man had become unruly, grabbed the mop, and swept it back and forth over the woman's shoes. When the employee asked the man to stop, police say he turned his back and pushed her into the corner. Police say the woman was shaking and crying. Authorities say Thornton insulted and swore at officers during the arrest and threatened them with bodily harm. He was released on $20,000 bond. If you've got $1 million to spare, I got the place to put it. 10 parking places, one flight below the street at an apartment building on 42 Crosby Street in New York City have been offered for sale by the developer for $1 million each, nearly five times the median U.S. price for an entire home. The parking space ranges in size from 150 to 200 square feet each.
And welcome back. All right, let's get into some Warriors talk. So last night we played against the Clippers. The Clippers were not at full strength, but we dominated them 128 to 113. Let's talk about what happened in that game. That game, we played all of our top players. Our Curry played, Klay Thompson played, which was another great thing. Festus Ezeli played, who hasn't played in 17 months. He is our backup center. He's a 7 foot large man, and that's what we need. We need another large man to help protect the basket and play great defense. And when Andrew Bogut, who's our 7 foot two Australian man, gets a little dinged up or a little tired, we're able to bring in this guy and really have of not a huge drop off, because Bogut is one of the top big man defenders up there. He's top five easy. You know, and then hopefully Festus Ezeli is able to bring his level up. One up to that level, so, but you know, if it's drop off a little bit, that's fine. But last year we just had a huge drop off defensively from Andrew Bogut to Jermaine O'Neal. So if we can have that another huge body center, and you know, Festus Ezeli is young and athletic and nimble, and all we hope is that he stays healthy. Let's talk about a little bit about Steve Kerr and his offense. His offense is completely different than Mark Jackson. Mark Jackson loved that isolation game. He loved putting Curry on the wing and letting him go, or putting David Lee down on the block and letting him go one-on-one. And I hated it. I truly, truly hated it. I mean, our team is just so fast and so young and such good passers. Let's have some more formations. Let's run some plays. Let's not just have some street ball where they can just go play, you know, one on one pick and roll. Let's have an offense like the Spurs. This complex, you know, the point guard runs everything. Curry can do what Parker does. I think even better than he's a better shooter, obviously, but you know, he's such an underrated driver and passer, Curry, that I think if he has this nice pick and roll offense with big men's and people rotating, Clay setting up for the three, or you know, Andre Iguodala slash into the hole. You know, we have so many slashers and shooters, and that's just such a great combination. And Curry was able to take that and just run all these different kind of offenses and these different kind of sets. You know, have Bogut be able to touch the ball more, have him come up to the top, set some big picks. You know, off ball screens, some, you know, movement. It's not so stagnant as it used to be with the Mark Jackson, you know, era. You know, but also another thing. I'm not trying to rip Mark Jackson. I'm very thankful to him for what he's done for the Warriors, but I think it's now we're at a point where he could not help us anymore, and we need a step up. I mean, he was great at bringing these players together. I think that's what he is. He's a motivational speaker. You know, he's a preacher. You know, he knows how to talk to a large group of people, or you know, and bring them together as one. And I think that's what he did with the Warriors. And I think that's why the Warriors were able to do what they did. But his offensive schemes and his defensive schemes and the way he day-to-day management dealing with you know, the upper management, his boss is, you know, he was not good. He was not great at that. And that's what you need. If you want to build a championship, if you want to move forward, if you want to win some Western Conference titles, you want to get to the NBA championship, you have to have everyone's got to be meshing together. You know, Greg Papa's meshing with whoever the owner of the Spurs is and the GM, you know, they know, just let him do him. So what I think Steve Kerr can do is I think he can the players are already brought together, I think, but he can install this offense. He can install the way we play together and become a more developed team, more refined and more fundamentally sound team, which didn't really show against the Clippers because we committed 28 turnovers, which is just an extremely high number. And even Steve Kerr came out, he's like, if we want to play in any kind of games, you know, I won't tolerate these 28 turnovers. And, you know, that's the first time I've ever seen a coach be really pissed off during a preseason basketball game. Let's talk about how Klay and Steph look. We all saw them this summer playing USA basketball. Great. They all both look great. Curry's been just draining those threes. Klay is not just shooting threes. He's driving the ball to the hole, and he's keeping up with his great defense. Let's talk about some of the people we've added onto our team. Barbosa, the Brazilian Flash. Man, he's a absolute wizard with the ball. It's great we have him, another backup point guard. Sean Livingston, who's a big 6'4 shooting guard, can play point guard too. You know, more of a defensive minded player. He played again. He was on the Nets last year, and he played against LeBron in the playoffs, and he was guarding him, and he was one of the only players I thought that could shut down LeBron to a point. We also add Brandon Rush, who is a former Warrior, who's also a great defensive player. You know, he's also can stretch the floor, shoot the ball, plays great defense. And now you have a question between Harrison Barnes and Andre Iguodala. This is the question Kerr is going to have to answer. This is the question that is going to start his coaching career with the Warriors. Who does he start? Does he start Andre Iguodala or does he start Harrison Barnes? I mean, if he doesn't start Iguodala, Iguodala is older, more mature. I think Iguodala would have more of a problem with it. I think Harrison Barnes is young and he knows he's developing. You know, he had an off year last year, so maybe bring him off the bench. But Harrison Barnes is so young and so much potential that I think he would best be utilized with that first team. But again, this is Kerr's decision. You know, Iguodala's got the great defensive skills. So, you know, I'm glad I'm not in Kerr's shoes. Because it's a very difficult decision, because you don't want either one of them getting mad at you. I assume Harrison Barnes wouldn't get mad at you, but I read a couple articles that Iguodala would be very upset if he didn't, you know, wasn't a starter. I mean, he made the second team all defense, and how do you not start a guy who's on second team all defense? It's going to be an interesting decision for Steve Kerr and the rest of the coaching staff for the Warriors. Interesting note about last night, you know, when he called timeout, you saw him grab the clipboard and write up the plays, which we haven't seen for the last 3 years because Mark Jackson never called the plays. Mark Jackson never wrote up the plays. It was always the assistant coaches. And the funny thing is, Mark Jackson was the one who always had issues with assistant coaches, and he definitely going to rely on the assistant coaches more than Kerr because Kerr's had the GM experience, you know, a little bit more around basketball than just being a player. I mean, Mark Jackson was an announcer before, and so is Kerr, but Kerr was also GM of the Phoenix Suns. The last note I want to touch on before I end this lovely show and head out to Bruco to watch that Giants game is the health during the season for the Warriors. You know, Bogut is always the number one concern because he's the center of he's the anchor of our defense. Defense turns into offense. And it's just a very crucial and important thing that they stay healthy and are able to play. You know, he doesn't have to play all 82. I would be fine for him sitting out every five games or once or every back-to-back game. But we need him for the playoff time. And you know, it hurts so much this year when he couldn't play in the playoffs. And we definitely were down. It definitely was a different feel for the Giants or for the Warriors. So, you know, I think if that every team wants to stay healthy, you know, it's like, of course, but it's definitely especially for us because we've never been a healthy team. We've never gone into playoffs fully healthy. You know, D. Lee hurt, you know, Bogut hurt. So, you know, Iguodala was a little banged up in the playoffs. So there's so many different aspects, but again, this is the beginning of the season, and there's some hype going around. I'm real excited for the Warriors, but you know what I'm real excited for that Giants game, and I cannot wait. I am so excited, and I wanted to thank everyone for listening to me today. Remember, today was a special day. I got of course, I want to talk before the game, and I want to talk during the game. I want everyone to listen to me. So next week, I will be on my regular time, Wednesday 6 to 7. You can listen to me at radio.dominican.edu. My podcasts are up there also. It's Banter by the Bay. I hope you all are having a great, great day, and I hope the Giants win tonight. Let's go, Giants.